State Farm. This is Jessica.
Hey, Jessica, Jerry Newman. Does State Farm offer more discounts to more drivers?
Yep, like the good driver discount.
So it's for good, but not great drivers.
No, Jerry. There's also the multi-line discount.
For calling from multiple lines while driving.
You should never use a phone while driving.
I only make calls from my car when I'm stuck in a ditch or something.
Are you in a ditch?
Yes, I am.
State Farm offers more discounts to more drivers than any other insurance company. Get to a better state.
Give me a call. Your good neighbor State Farm agent, Susan Casper, at 659-5678.
Rich is just a really, really, really good guy. The term good egg isn't enough to describe him. He's also certified organic and free range. Rich puts the cap back on everything. The toothpaste, the olive oil, the shampoo, everything. He lets his 10-year-old nephew beat him at virtual tennis, even though he can straight-up slay his 10-year-old nephew in virtual tennis. When the toilet paper is running low, Rich replaces the roll on the actual holder, not just on the back of the toilet. Rich is texting and driving. Rich? No. What are you doing, Rich? I was just telling everyone how great you are. Texting and driving makes good people look bad. Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
When you need to know.
This has nothing to do with what's going on taking water or sewage to State Road 28. This is just what we have presently in our city that we need to work on.
On the air first when seconds count.
We discuss our staff that have symptoms, our students that have symptoms. We spend time with the health department. We spend time with the other superintendents. So much of our day, the topic is COVID.
The news team you've come to depend on.
Normally we would ask for more than that, but just to be conservative this year. But on all the budgets, I feel like we've been very conservative and very diligent in filling out our budgets this year.
Clinton County's 24-hour news media.
At the very least, getting the roundhouse cleaned up, but again, trying to preserve the machine shop is what I think is the absolute priority right now.
When you need to know, WILO.
WILO and Casper Media are members of the exclusive International Broadcasters Idea Bank. Casper Media and 99 other broadcasters from around the world come together to trade ideas on how to better serve our communities and our listeners. A member of the International Broadcasters Idea Bank since 1991, Casper Media has hosted the Idea Bank convention throughout the years. Casper Media and Idea Bank, constantly working to better serve you. Depend on WILO.
Welcome back to Inside the Huddle, sponsored by your State Farm insurance agent, Susan Casper. I'm your host, Ken Hartman. I'm really looking forward to this next segment we're going to have. We're going to have the president of the Negro American Baseball League Museum on here in just a second, and that is Bob Kendrick, and we welcome in Bob this morning. Bob, how you doing?
Ken, I'm doing just fine, man. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Not a problem. We were originally going to do this a week ago, and we got kind of mixed up in some things, but now I got you on here, and you know, I really think this is something I know a lot of people don't know about. But what really got me going with this is when the Kansas City T-Bones renamed their team the Monarchs. And of course, the Kansas City Monarchs are known throughout the country for as a big part of not only Negro League baseball but Major League Baseball as well.
Yeah, no, it was a tremendous franchise. We're talking about one of the greatest baseball franchises, not in just Black baseball history, but in baseball history. 40 years, one season, one losing season in an almost 40-year existence in the Negro League sent more players to the major leagues than any other franchise. It was a model organization. There are those who will say that the Kansas City Monarchs were the New York Yankees of the Negro League, but there are others who will say that the New York Yankees were the Kansas City Monarchs of the major leagues. They were that good.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing that, you know, it should make you feel really good that you have a minor league team, and I think we just lost Bob there for a second, so I'll have to find a way to get him back. So we're trying to talk with Bob Kendrick about the Major League about the Negro League baseball team. The basis of this is that the T-Bones renamed their franchise the Monarchs. So, and to honor the Negro League team, the Negro League, I think he's just now calling back here. So I think that's good. We'll get this taken care of here in just a second. So, just waiting for pick up here and go back to it. Okay, we are now back. Bob, you with us now?
I'm back.
Okay,
I'm
good. Back. Good. So, but I think this was a great move of the T-Bones League, and this is the T-Bones are an independent American Association franchise. So, how did that make you feel when you found out they were going to do it, and what did they have to do to go ahead and get that taken care of?
Yeah, they had their new owner, Mark Brandmeier, approached me about, I guess, a little over 4 months or so ago with this idea. You know, he had some time to think about it as they had bought the club, and of course COVID had kind of killed their season last year. And so he had a little time to think about rebranding the team, and he reached out to us about the possibility of naming the club the Monarchs. Prior to that, I hadn't even really thought about it. And initially I was like kind of in shock. And of course we were a little hesitant because the Monarch is our flagship brand.
Mm-hmm.
But the more we got to know Mark, we got an opportunity to look at his business plan and everything that he wanted to do for the club and how this could effectively impact the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. You know, as a cultural institution, Ken, you're always looking at how can you create relevancy. And while this brand is a wonderful historic brand, to be able to bring it to life, to have these young players, and many of them aspiring to get to the major league, put on those uniforms, essentially brings back the spirit of Buck O'Neill and Satchel Paige and Bullet Rogan, Hilton Smith, Jose Mendez, Ernie Banks, all the greats who called Kansas City home, you know, at one point in time, and then the opportunity to create a perpetual revenue stream on an annualized basis obviously is appealing because I think any nonprofit is looking for those opportunities. And even the royalty aspects of what this partnership brings to the table is also appealing. The more folks who go through the turnstiles, the more merchandise that is purchased, the more food and beverages that are consumed.
Right.
It all supports the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. And so we, after, you know, a lot of back and forth and dotting I's and crossing T's, we came to a mutual agreement, and everybody seemingly is very excited about this.
Did you guys get to have your 100-year anniversary last year or not?
We did, but it just wasn't in the way that we had initially envisioned it when we announced it in February, and we were so excited, and Major League Baseball and the Players Association were with us here in Kansas City. I remember that like it was yesterday because it was another frigid day on February 13th. I mean, it was so cold that day. And you know, Major League Baseball and the Players Association announced a joint $1 million contribution to the museum. We roll out all these plans, and then 30 days later, everything came to a screeching halt.
Mm-hmm.
But we were able to salvage, you know, some aspects of the 100th anniversary, although we couldn't do the group gathering event that we had initially planned to do. But honestly, Ken, the level of engagement around the Negro Leagues and the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum may be at an all-time high. And so we were able to execute, you know, virtual events like our Tip Your Cap to the Negro Leagues campaign, and then the big announcement of the United States Congress passing legislation to authorize the Mint to mint a commemorative coin in recognition of the 100th anniversary. The coin will be minted in 2022. Which we're super excited about. And then at the end of the year, Major League Baseball's epic announcement that it was recognizing the Negro League for just what it was, a major league. And so all these things built up a lot of interest in the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. And so we had a tremendously successful year in spite of all the hardships that were being caused by this crazy pandemic that we're all enduring.
Where are you at with the museum right now? Is it all the renovation done, or you still got more of that to go do?
Well, we've got an expansion project in the works right now. The building that the Negro Leagues were formed in, the Paseo YMCA,
mm-hmm.
that is where the meeting was held. Rube Foster led a contingent of 8 independent black baseball team owners into a meeting at the Paseo YMCA on February 13, 1920. The Negro League, the Negro National League, was established.
Right.
And we acquired that old property, a historic landmark that had been left to ruin, to the ruins of time. It had been boarded up, dilapidated. We acquired that property some years ago and started an incredible restoration effort to save that building and convert it into an education and research center in memory of the late, great Buck O'Neill. So that project is still ongoing, and obviously the pandemic situation has kind of slowed the timetable down on that, but we are still fully committed to getting that facility open in memory of Buck and continuing our efforts to educate the public about the history of the Negro League, both on and off the field. And Ken, I think it's the off-the-field aspect that really surprised people. I hope the work that we've done now over the last 30-plus years, people readily understand and accept that there were some great players that played in these leagues known as the Negro League.
Right.
But the things that, you know, the life lessons that stem from the Negro League are just as important as a, you know, a broader context part of this story.
You know, and the other thing that you've got in your museum is your Field of Legends, which I think is just fantastic. I mean, you know, and for people who don't know that many players from that league, you can really learn a lot in a short period of time.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we got 10,000 square feet of exhibit space, so it's not a large, super large museum, but man, within those 10,000 square feet is a lot of information. And that Field of Legends, and obviously I'm biased, but I think it's one of the most amazing displays in any museum anywhere in the world. Those life-size statues are just absolutely compelling. Mm-hmm. And they represent 10 of the first group of Negro Leaguers to be inducted into the National Baseball Hall of Fame. And, of course, they're all cast in position as if they were playing a game. And so, essentially, what we do at the Negro League Museum is we segregate our visitors from the field. So you can see the field, but you can't get to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the only way that you're allowed to take field at the Negro League Baseball Museum, you have to earn that right, and you do so by learning that story. And man, by the time you work your way to the field, because that's exactly what happens, you work your way to the field, there's this triumphant-like feeling that I think is very much reminiscent of what it was like the day that Jackie Robinson took the field with the Brooklyn Dodgers. Our guests, they feel it. And the statues are so amazingly lifelike. They're all, you know, life size based on the height, weight data information that we had on each of the athletes. And so it's a very moving and compelling experience.
This is kind of a sad thing, but I do want to bring this up. How much did Hank Aaron mean to you guys?
Oh, man, I tell you now, for me personally, he meant the world. He was my all-time favorite Major League Baseball player. My childhood idol as a kid growing up in rural Georgia, Crawfordville, Georgia, about 80 miles east of Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And so his loss was tremendous. Number one, it was a shock because we didn't see this forthcoming.
Right.
You know, there was no telltale signs that he was, you know, having severe health issues that would have us, you know, kind of anticipating this or being prepared for this. And so it was a tremendous blow for the Negro League Baseball Museum, for the Negro League family, for the baseball world. And for me personally, it has been just an emotionally draining time over the last couple of weeks. You know, it obviously triggered a slew of interviews, which we're excited about. We gave us an opportunity to talk about his Negro League roots. A lot of people did not know that Henry Aaron started his career in the Negro Leagues with the Indianapolis Clowns.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to them, Ken, as a skinny, cross-handed hitting shortstop.
Right.
So Henry Aaron, folks, was a right-hand hitter who hit with his left hand on top.
Mm-hmm.
That, as you well know, is unorthodox.
That's right.
It is that you break your wrist hitting in that manner. Henry Aaron is knocking the cover off the baseball in a highly unorthodox fashion. When he gets to the Clowns, they put the right hand on top, and the rest, as we say, is history.
That's right.
And so, you know, it was a tremendous loss because Henry Aaron, Willie Mays, Ernie Banks, Roy Campanella, Monty Irvin, these are all major stars who left the Negro League and went on to become great stars in the Major League. They kind of validate the other talent that was there in the Negro League that people didn't know about. Because you know these names. You've heard these names.
Right.
You know everything they did and accomplished at the major league level. And so, yeah, that's a tremendous loss.
Okay. Bob, anything else you want to add before I let you go?
Well, you know, we're just excited this year. We're getting, next week this time, we'll be announcing our plans for our 101st anniversary, Negro League 101.
Okay.
And so we're excited about that. We'll announce several key acquisitions for the museum. You know, we're always out there scouting, trying to find memorabilia to bring in, to bring back home. Because every time we are able to acquire a piece, that's a new story to be told. And there are no insignificant pieces for us, you know, but it becomes a challenge because we're setting the market now.
That's right.
The more we popularize the story, we're driving up the price of these artifacts to the point that makes it difficult for us to go compete to go get them. But that's okay. You know, that's a small price to pay to help people understand, you know, the importance of the Negro Leagues. And so, but next week, this time, we'll be announcing plans for Negro Leagues 101 and keeping the celebration going from last year.
Okay. Bob, I really appreciate your time this morning. I definitely want to continue this conversation at some point in time. You take good care, and we will catch you a little further down the line, okay?
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Thanks, Bob. Talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye. That was Bob Kendrick, who is the president of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. He has been our guest. We're going to take a quick break now and bring on our next guest. You're listening to Inside the Huddle, sponsored by the State Farm Insurance Agent, Susan Casper.
Today we decided to walk to school. At the corner, we waited to cross the street. The stoplight counted down. 15, 14,
41, 31, I mean 13.
We took a left on Carroll Garden Street.
Garden Street?
Loud music was coming from a car. Danny's a smart kid, but he gets so distracted.
There were so many other sounds, I didn't know what to focus on.
Danny, Earth to Danny. Suddenly he realized he forgot his homework again.
I left my homework on the table.
At the school steps, we hug goodbye. I really hope he doesn't have another bad day at school today.
When you can see learning and attention issues from their side, you can be on their side. That's why there's Understood.org, a free online resource for the parents of the 1 in 5 kids with learning and attention issues. Get personalized recommendations, practical tips, daily access to experts, and more. Go from misunderstanding to Understood.org. Brought to you by Understood and the Ad Council.
Your free local online newspaper, ClintonCountyDailyNews.com, is your number one source for the latest news in Clinton and surrounding counties. But that's not all we have to offer. Listen to archived audio from the past 5 programs on the Party Line program every day. Plus, make sure you chime in our weekly poll question at the bottom of the page. ClintonCountyDailyNews.com, your free local online newspaper.
State Farm agents are one of a kind. They understand insurance and share a genuine concern for others. State Farm agent Susan Casper works very hard every day to help people find the right products for their insurance and financial needs. From homeowners and renters to retirement planning, please call Susan Casper today to talk about which products are best for you. Get to a better state. State Farm.
WILO and Casper Media are members of the exclusive International Broadcasters Idea Bank. Casper Media and 99 other broadcasters from around the world come together to trade ideas on how to better serve our communities and our listeners. A member of the International Broadcasters Idea Bank since 1991, Casper Media has hosted the Idea Bank convention throughout the years. Casper Media and Idea Bank, constantly working to better serve you. Depend on WILO.
Welcome back to Inside the Huddle, sponsored by your State Farm Insurance Agent, Susan Casper. I'm your host, Ken Hartman. We're now going to bring on the Big South Conference Commissioner, Kyle Kuehlander here. Kyle, how are you doing this morning?
Fine, Ken. Thanks for having me on.
Not a problem. We already had your other associated for football. We had Ted Gumbart on this morning. I didn't realize that you guys were the part of the same league until after I'd already got you guys scheduled, so...
Well, is that right? That's interesting. Yeah, we've had a partnership for quite a while that would help both of us from a membership standpoint. So we're trying to work through some of the details of what this might look like moving forward.
So, I mean, but for football, this is definitely going to increase. You hope to really start increasing more visibility and, in fact, also get a few more bids in the postseason.
Yeah, that's the idea, is that you increase your postseason access, but most importantly, you're providing more opportunities for student athletes, to compete within a conference, to compete for championships, and to provide the best experience that they can. So that's really what it's all about.
How has this year been with COVID? I mean, I know it's been different for everybody, but any major change for you guys other than the fact that most of your sports have probably got moved into the spring?
It's been a struggle. I confess, I didn't handle it well. Back in the spring, I think I was depressed for a while, like many people were. As a conference commissioner, you're used to trying to figure out, how to, again, provide the best opportunities for student athletes and run championships and manage your officiating programs. You're not used to trying to figure out how you're going to test people, dealing with a pandemic, canceling games. I mean, it was just, it was really a surreal experience. But you had to pivot and you had to figure out how best to make it happen. So we think we've done pretty well in that process. And you're right, we didn't have sports for the most part in the fall in the Big South, which was unfortunate, but the momentum just got away from us. We just couldn't make it happen. And so now this month, and we've been kind of talking to our membership, we've got, I think, 19 sports going here starting in February.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to the basketball, of course, it's been ongoing. We have volleyball for this weekend for the first time. We've got soccer starting up, not to mention the spring sports, softball, baseball, lacrosse. So, I mean, and if you're on campus right now, it is really a challenge. And you feel for the athletics trainers and the sports information people who, a lot of this really falls on them because they're trying to track all this and support those sports. So it's a challenge, but as we remind everybody, our student athletes have been sitting out for 10, 11 months and just been chomping at the bit to get out there. And
mm-hmm.
So we're doing this for them, and they're excited to get out there and be in competing. And so we're excited about that.
Now, are you going to have football this spring or not?
We are.
Okay.
We're starting the 27th of February.
Okay. And what are you going to have about, we got five or six teams, if I'm not mistaken, playing for?
Yeah, we've got five playing. Two of our teams did play in the fall. They played four games in the fall and chose not to compete in the spring. And then Hampton University is not competing at all. They don't have students on campus. So we'll have five this spring, play for a championship and play for a berth in the FCS playoffs. And, again, they're excited to get out there and ready to go.
How much difference is it going to be for conferences like you guys, other than the Power Five, and that's what I meant by that statement, is it going to be with everybody having an extra year of eligibility left? What does that mean for you guys?
Well, the challenge for us is, our institutions don't have the budgets that the Power Five does in order to support that number of student athletes. So even though you've got an extra year of eligibility, you may not be able to fund the scholarships for everybody coming back. So that's the real challenge for us, is how to manage that, because we want to be as fair as we can for people. But unfortunately, not everybody's going to be able to have the same financial aid that maybe they would in this current year or their senior year. So it's making tough decisions about that, and how do you manage that, and how large of a recruiting class can you bring in when you've already got a lot of student athletes returning and you got those financial aid challenges.
And
that's really the main difference, I think.
I was going to say, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, is that you still have to stay within the same amount of recruiting people. You can't recruit any more than what you have. Those numbers did not change, did they?
That's correct. The initial signing class numbers did not change.
Okay, so that makes it even more difficult. And even though if somebody's been great for you for 4 years, do you bring them back for another year and maybe not build for the future a little bit?
Right, exactly. And so you're trying to deal with all that. Of course, there's a lot of action in the transfer portal with people moving around, and that'll probably increase once the new transfer rules get approved and put in place. And a lot of people are anticipating that, so
mm-hmm.
making the movement with that in mind. So managing rosters at the collegiate level certainly is difficult this year. It's just going to get harder with all the movement.
One of the big reasons I really wanted to talk to conferences like you and you particularly is the fact that We've got a situation coming up here where conference basketball tournaments may or may not be played, depending upon where you are. But I have a feeling for people like with you guys, you won bid, and maybe another one if you're fortunate. You are probably going to have to go ahead and play that conference tournament, though, won't you?
Absolutely. And we've been committed to the basketball season all along. We've been committed to our conference championship all along. You know, we had some pretty good protocols in place. And, you know, granted, going into the season, you know, we're all flying blind a little bit in terms of trying to figure out the best scheduling procedures and protocols. But ours has worked out pretty well. In fact, a week ago, the Big South Conference averaged the most games completed on average across the conference in the country. So we're really pleased the efforts, not only on the conference staff, but what our coaches and ADs and administrations have done, and being flexible and trying to reschedule games and get them played. And Dan Gavitt, the NCAA, was just telling us on a call last week, there's only two conferences that have achieved the minimum number of Division I games to be eligible for the postseason, and that's been Big South is one of those. So we're really pleased with the commitment we've made and what we've done, and that commitment continues with our championship. We will have it, although we're trying to figure out how those protocols work in terms of dealing with institutions that might have to pause because of positive tests.
Of course, the conference has got a lot of notoriety through Winthrop, and that's been one of your bigger, you know, most successful schools in the NCAA tournament.
Right, right. Yeah, Winthrop, it just continues to have great seasons. You know, unfortunately, they won, I guess, the tournament last year, but unfortunately, they couldn't play in the NCAA. So they had a lot of great players coming back, preseason favorite, and that they have not disappointed. You know, just lost one conference game so far. They were undefeated until last week. So they're certainly the leader going in at this point. But we've got a couple of really good teams in Radford and UNC Asheville that'll have something to say about that. So,
all right. Are you guys
it'll be a fun tournament.
Are you guys looking at expanding anymore, or now you want to keep what you got?
Well, North Carolina A&T is coming into the Big South next year.
Mm-hmm.
We're really excited about that. Great people, great program. Really fits well with us right in the heart of our footprint in North Carolina. And so that'll take us to 12 overall. So that will, that's a pretty good number. You know, you get any larger than that, you'll have to think hard about it. So we don't feel any urgency, but that's not to say there wouldn't be the right institutions that might come along that we would consider. On the football side, obviously we talked a little bit about that with, you know, if Kennesaw State and North Alabama move over to the A-Sun, you know, we have to think about, that would take us down to 7. You know, do we want to increase that number or not? So, that gets a little bit more complicated, but
right.
We feel really good about where we are membership wise. And, you know, we say we're built to last because we're very geographically compact. All 12 of our full members in 3-state area, North, South Carolina, and Virginia. In this day and age, when people are really concerned about travel and finances, it's really a good model, and we feel great about where we are.
Any piece of advice you'd give to any other athletic director or person in your place who's got to deal with all this stuff?
I think, obviously we all know we've got to be flexible, but don't jump to conclusions, you know. And one thing I think Greg Sankey at the SEC, and he's been pretty vocal about and received some recognition on, is, you know, don't make decisions too early. Things change so quickly that you kind of have to wait it out a little bit. You have to make sure you have as much data, as much information as you have before you make decisions. And I think that's served us well. We've tried to play things out as much as we could and take advantage of situations when we could. So don't be too rash in your decision making. Let's let it play out and see how things pan out.
All righty. Kyle, anything else you want to add before I let you go?
Well, I don't think so. We're really looking forward to March Madness. We know it's going to happen. There's no doubt about it. The conference tournaments, at least in the Big South, is going to happen. NCAAs are going to happen, and we're really excited about that. We're excited about the upcoming tournaments. Best time of the year.
I agree. It's the perfect time of year that I absolutely love. So.
And we're looking forward to coming to Indiana, by the way. We're really excited about that.
Okay. You take good care, and we will catch you further later down the line. I appreciate the time this morning.
Thanks, Ken. Thank you.
All right. Take care, Kyle. We'll
talk
to you later. All right. Bye-bye. That was Big South Conference Commissioner Kyle Kuehlander. He's been our guest. Many thanks to our guests this morning, who have been Ted Goombart, Bob Kendrick and Kyle Kulander. That's going to wrap up our show for this week. So it's as we've talked here a couple times, it's been kind of cold on the outside this morning, but you everybody take good care. Thanks to our sponsor, Susan Casper, the State Farm Insurance Agent. So join us next week for another Inside the Huddle. So until then, I'm Ken Hartman. Take care and have a great week.
This has been Inside the Huddle on WILO, brought to you by Susan Casper of State Farm Insurance in Frankfort. Join us next Saturday at 9 a.m. for another edition of Inside the Huddle on WILO.